don't feel so good. What do you mean you saw? Newt began. I wanted Thomas! Albie yelled, with a sudden burst of energy that Thomas would have thought impossible a few seconds earlier. I didn't ask for you, Newt! Thomas! I asked for freaking Thomas! Newt looked up, questioned Thomas with a raising of his eyebrows. Thomas shrugged, feeling sicker by the second. What did Albie want him for? Fine, you grouchy shuck, Newt said. He's right here. Talk to him. Leave, Albie said. His eyes closed, his breathing heavy. No way, I want to hear.
Newt.
A pause.
Leave. Now.
Thomas felt incredibly awkward, worried about what Newt was thinking and dreading what Albie wanted to say to him. But, Newt protested.
Out!
Albie sat up as he yelled, his voice cracking with the strain of it. He scooted himself back to lean against the headboard again.
Get out!
Newt's face sank in obvious hurt. Thomas was surprised to see no anger there. Then, after a long, tense moment, Newt stood from his chair and walked over to the door, opened it. He's really going to leave? Thomas thought.
Don't expect me to kiss your butt when you come saying sorry, he said, then stepped into the hallway.
Close the door!
Albie shouted, one final insult. Newt obeyed, slamming it shut. Thomas's heart rate quickened. He was now alone with a guy who'd had a bad temper before getting attacked by a griever and going through the changing. He hoped Albie would say what he wanted and be done with it. A long pause stretched into several minutes, and Thomas's hands shook with fear.
I know who you are,
Albie said, finally breaking the silence. Thomas couldn't find words to reply. He tried. Nothing came out but an incoherent mumble. He was utterly confused and scared.
I know who you are,
Albie repeated slowly.
Seen it. Seen everything. Where we came from. Who you are. Who the girl is. I remember the flare.
The flare? Thomas forced himself to talk.
I don't know what you're talking about. What did you see?
I'd love to know who I am.
It ain't pretty,
Albie answered. And for the first time since Newt had left, Albie looked up, straight at Thomas. His eyes were deep pockets of sorrow, sunken, dark.
It's horrible, you know. Why would those shucks want us to remember? Why can't we just live here and be happy?
Albie, Thomas wished he could take a peek in the boy's mind, see what he'd seen.
The changing, he pressed. What happened? What came back? You're not making any sense. You?
Albie started, then suddenly grabbed his own throat, making gurgly choking sounds. His legs kicked out, and he rolled onto his side, thrashing back and forth as if someone else were trying to strangle him. His tongue stuck out of his mouth. He bit it over and over. Thomas stood up quickly, stumbled backward, horrified. Albie struggled as if he was having a seizure, his legs kicking in every direction. The dark skin of his face, which had been oddly pale just a minute earlier, had turned purple. His eyes rolled up so far in their sockets, they looked like glowing white marbles.
Albie!
Thomas yelled, not daring to reach down and grab him.
Newt!
He screamed, cupping his hands around his mouth.
Newt, get in here!
The door was flung open before he'd finished his last sentence. Newt ran to Albie and grabbed him by the shoulders, pushing with his whole body to pin the convulsing boy to the bed.
Grab his legs!
Thomas moved forward, but Albie's legs kicked and flailed out, making it impossible to get any closer. His foot hit Thomas in the jaw. A lance of pain shot through his whole skull. He stumbled backward again, rubbing the sore spot.
Just bloody do it!
Newt yelled. Thomas steeled himself, then jumped on top of Albie's body, grabbing both legs and pinning them to the bed. He wrapped his arms around the boy's thighs and squeezed, while Newt put a knee on one of Albie's shoulders, then grabbed at Albie's hands,
still clasped around his own neck in a chokehold.
"Let go!" Newt yelled as he tugged. "You're bloody killing yourself!"
Thomas could see the muscles in Newt's arms flexing, veins popping out as he pulled at Albie's hands, until finally, inch by inch, he was able to pry them away. He pushed them tightly against the struggling boy's chest. Albie's whole body jerked a couple of times, his midsection thrusting up and away from the bed. Then, slowly, he calmed, and a few seconds later, he lay still, his breath evening. His eyes glazed over. Thomas held firm on Albie's legs, afraid to move and set the boy off again. Newt waited a full minute before he slowly let go of Albie's hands. Then another minute before he pulled his knee back and stood up. Thomas took that as his cue to do the same, hoping the ordeal had truly ended. Albie looked up, eyes droopy, as if he was on the edge of slipping into a deep sleep.
"I'm sorry, Newt," he whispered. "Don't know what happened. It was like something was controlling my body. I'm sorry."
Thomas took a deep breath, sure he'd never experienced something so disturbing and uncomfortable again. He hoped.
"Sorry's nothing," Newt replied. "You were trying to bloody kill yourself." "Wasn't me, I swear,"
Albie murmured. Newt threw his hands up.
"What do you mean it wasn't you?" he asked.
"I don't know. It wasn't me."
Albie looked just as confused as Thomas felt. But Newt seemed to think it wasn't worth trying to figure out, at least at the moment. He grabbed the blankets that had fallen off the bed in Albie's struggle and pulled them atop the sick boy.
"Get your butt to sleep, and we'll talk about it later."
He patted him on the head, then added,
"You're messed up, Shank."
But Albie was already drifting off, nodding slightly as his eyes closed. Newt caught Thomas's gaze and gestured for the door. Thomas had no problem leaving that crazy house. He followed Newt out and into the hall. Then, just as they stepped through the doorway, Albie mumbled something from his bed. Both boys stopped in their tracks.
"What?"
Newt asked. Albie opened his eyes for a brief moment, then repeated what he'd said a little more loudly.
"Be careful with the girl."
Then his eyes slid shut. There it was again, the girl. Somehow things always led back to the girl. Newt gave Thomas a questioning look, but Thomas could only return it with a shrug. He had no idea what was going on.
"Let's go," Newt whispered.
"And Newt," Albie called again from the bed, not bothering to open his eyes.
"Yeah?" "Protect the maps."
Albie rolled over, his back telling them he'd finally finished speaking. Thomas didn't think that sounded very good. Not good at all. He and Newt left the room and softly closed the door. Chapter 28. Thomas followed Newt as he hurried down the stairs and out of the homestead into the bright light of mid-afternoon. Neither boy said a word for a while. For Thomas, things just seemed to be getting worse and worse.
"Hungry, Tommy?"
Newt asked when they were outside. Thomas couldn't believe the question.
"Hungry? I feel like puking after what I just saw. No, I'm not hungry."
Newt only grinned.
"Well, I am, you Shank. Let's go look for some leftovers from lunch. We need to talk."
Somehow I knew you were going to say something like that. No matter what he did, he was becoming more and more entwined in the dealings of the glade. And he was growing to expect it. They made their way directly to the kitchen, where, despite Fry Pan's grumbling, they were able to get cheese sandwiches and raw vegetables. Thomas couldn't ignore the way the keeper of the cooks kept giving him a weird look, eyes darting away whenever Thomas returned the stare. Something told him this sort of treatment would now be the norm. For some reason, he was different from everyone else in the glade. He felt like he'd lived an entire lifetime since awakening from his memory wipe, but he'd only been there a week. The boys decided to take their lunches to eat outside, and a few minutes later they found themselves on the west wall, looking out at the many work activities going on throughout the glade, their backs up against a spot of thick ivy. Thomas forced himself to eat. The way things were going, he needed to make sure he'd have strength to deal with whatever insane thing came his way next.
"Ever seen that happen before?" Thomas asked after a minute or so.
Newt looked at him, his face suddenly somber.
"What Albie just did?
No, never. But then again, no one's ever tried to tell us what they remembered during the changing. They always refuse. Albie tried to. Must be why he went nuts for a while."
Thomas paused in the middle of chewing. Could the people behind the maze control them somehow? It was a terrifying thought.
"We have to find Gally," Newt said through a bite of carrot, changing the subject. "Bugger's gone off and hid somewhere. Soon as we're done eating, I need to find him and throw his butt in jail."
"Serious?" Thomas couldn't help feeling a shot of pure elation at the thought. He'd be happy to slam the door closed and throw away the key himself.
"That Shank threatened to kill you, and we have to make bloody sure it never happens again. That Shuckface is going to pay a heavy price for acting like that. He's lucky we don't banish him. Remember what I told you about order?"
"Yeah?"
Thomas's only concern was that Gally would just hate him all the more for being thrown in jail.
"I don't care," he thought. "I'm not scared of that guy anymore."
"Here's how it'll play out, Tommy," Newt said. "You're with me the rest of today. We need to figure things. Tomorrow, the slammer. Then you're Minho's, and I want you to stay away from the other Shanks for a while. Got it?"
Thomas was more than happy to oblige. Being mostly alone sounded like a great idea.
"Sounds beautiful. So Minho's going to train me?"
"That's right. You're a runner now. Minho'll teach you. The maze, the maps, everything. Lots to learn. I expect you to work your butt off."
Thomas was shocked that the idea of entering the maze again didn't frighten him all that much. He resolved to do just as Newt said, hoping it would keep his mind off things. Deeper down, he hoped to get out of the glade as much as possible. Avoiding other people was his new goal in life. The boys sat in silence, finishing their lunches, until Newt finally got to what he really wanted to talk about. Crumpling his trash into a ball, he turned and looked straight at Thomas.
"Thomas," he began, "I need you to accept something. We've heard it too many times now to deny it, and it's time to discuss it."
Thomas knew what was coming, but was startled. He dreaded the words.
"Gally said it, Albie said it, Ben said it," Newt continued. "The girl, after we took her out of the box, she said it."
He paused, perhaps expecting Thomas to ask what he meant, but Thomas already knew.
"They all said things were going to change."
Newt looked away for a moment, then turned back.
"That's right. And Gally, Albie, and Ben claim they saw you in their memories after the changing. And from what I gather, you weren't planting flowers and helping old ladies cross the street. According to Gally, there's something rotten enough about you that he wants to kill you."
"Newt, I don't know," Thomas started, but Newt didn't let him finish.
"I know you don't remember anything, Thomas. Quit saying that. Don't ever say it again. None of us remember anything, and we're bloody sick of you reminding us. The point is, there's something different about you, and it's time we figured it out."
Thomas was overwhelmed by a surge of anger.
"Fine, so how do we do it? I want to know who I am just as much as anyone else. Obviously. I need you to open your mind. Be honest if anything, anything at all, seems familiar."
"Nothing," Thomas started, but stopped. So much had happened since arriving, he'd almost forgotten how familiar the glade had felt to him that first night, sleeping next to Chuck. How comfortable and at home he'd felt. A far cry from the terror he should have experienced.
"I can see our wheels spinning," Newt said quietly.
"Talk."
Thomas hesitated, scared of the consequences of what he was about to say. But he was tired of keeping secrets.
"Well, I can't put my finger on anything specific." He spoke slowly, carefully. "But I did feel like I'd been here before when I first got here."
He looked at Newt, hoping to see some sort of recognition in his eyes.
"Anyone else go through that?"
But Newt's face was blank. He simply rolled his eyes.
No, Tommy. Most of us spent a week clunking our pants and bawling our eyes out.
Yeah, well... Thomas paused, upset and suddenly embarrassed. What did it all mean? Was he different from everyone else somehow? Was something wrong with him?
It all seemed familiar to me, and I knew I wanted to be a runner.
That's bloody interesting.
Newt examined him for a second, not hiding his obvious suspicion.
Well, keep looking for it. Strain your mind. Spend your free time wandering your thoughts and think about this place. Delve inside that brain of yours and seek it out. Try, for all our sakes.
I will.
Thomas closed his eyes, started searching the darkness of his mind.
Not now, you dumb shuck, Newt laughed. I just meant to do it from now on. Free time, meals, going to sleep at night, as you walk around, train, work.
Tell me anything that seems remotely familiar. Got it?
Yeah, got it. Thomas couldn't help worrying that he'd thrown up some red flags for Newt, and that the older boy was just hiding his concern.
Good that, Newt said, looking almost too agreeable. To begin, we better go see someone.
Who? Thomas asked, but knew the answer as soon as he spoke. Dread filled him again.
The girl. I want you to look at her till your eyes bleed. See if something gets triggered in that shuck brain of yours.
Newt gathered his lunch trash and stood up.
Then I want you to tell me every single word Albie said to you.
Thomas sighed, then got to his feet.
Okay.
He didn't know if he could bring himself to tell the complete truth about Albie's accusations, not to mention how he felt about the girl. It looked like he wasn't done keeping secrets after all. The boys walked back toward the homestead, where the girl still lay in a coma. Thomas couldn't stifle his worry about what Newt was thinking. He'd opened himself up, and he really liked Newt. If Newt turned on him now, Thomas didn't know if he could handle it.
If all else fails, Newt said, interrupting Thomas's thoughts, we'll send you to the Grievers, get you stung so you can go through the changing. We need your memories.
Thomas barked a sarcastic laugh at the idea, but Newt wasn't smiling. The girl seemed to be sleeping peacefully, like she'd wake up at any minute. Thomas had almost expected the skeletal remnant of a person, somehow on the verge of death. But her chest rose and fell with even breaths. Her skin was full of color. One of the medjacks was there, the shorter one. Thomas couldn't remember his name, dropping water into the comatose girl's mouth a few drips at a time. A plate and bowl on the bedside table had the remains of her lunch, mashed potatoes and soup. They were doing everything possible to keep her alive and healthy.
"Hey, Clint," Newt said, sounding comfortable, like he'd stopped by to visit many times before. "She's surviving?"
"Yeah," Clint answered. "She's doing fine, though she talks in her sleep all the time. We think she'll come out of it soon."
Thomas felt his hackles rise. For some reason, he'd never really considered the possibility that the girl might wake up and be okay, that she might talk to people. He had no idea why that suddenly made him so nervous.
"Have you been writing down every word she says?" Newt asked.
Clint nodded.
"Most of it's impossible to understand, but yeah, when we can."
Newt pointed at a notepad on the nightstand.
"Give me an example."
"Well, the same thing she said when we pulled her out of the box, about things changing.
Other stuff about the creators and how it all has to end. And,
Clint looked at Thomas as if he didn't want to continue in his company.
"It's okay. He can hear whatever I hear," Newt assured him.
"Well, I can't make it all out, but..."
Clint looked at Thomas again.
"She keeps saying his name over and over."
Thomas almost fell down at this. Would the references to him never end? How did he know this girl? It was like a maddening itch inside his skull that wouldn't go away.
"Thanks, Clint," Newt said, in what sounded to Thomas like an obvious dismissal. "Get us a report of all that, okay?"
"Will do."
The medjack nodded at both of them and left the room.
"Pull up a chair," Newt said as he sat on the edge of the bed.
Thomas, relieved that Newt still hadn't erupted into accusations, grabbed the one from the desk and placed it right next to where the girl's head lay. He sat down, leaning forward to look at her face.
"Anything ring a bell?" Newt asked.
"Anything at all?"
Thomas didn't respond, kept looking, willing his mind to break down the memory barrier and seek out this girl from his past. He thought back to those brief moments when she'd opened her eyes right after being pulled out of the box. They'd been blue, richer in color than the eyes of any other person he could remember seeing before. He tried to picture those eyes on her now as he looked at her slumbering face, melding the two images in his mind. Her black hair, her perfect white skin, her full lips. As he stared at her, he realized once more how truly beautiful she was. Stronger recognition briefly tickled the back of his mind, a flutter of wings in a dark corner, unseen, but there all the same. It lasted only an instant before vanishing into the abyss of his other captured memories. But he had felt something.
"I do know her,"
he whispered, leaning back in his chair. It felt good to finally admit it out loud. Newt stood up.
"What? Who is she?"
"No idea. But something clicked. I know her from somewhere."
Thomas rubbed his eyes, frustrated that he couldn't solidify the link.
"Well, keep bloody thinking. Don't lose it. Concentrate."
"I'm trying, so shut up."
Thomas closed his eyes, searched the darkness of his thoughts, seeking her face in that emptiness. Who was she? The irony of the question struck him. He didn't even know who he was. He leaned forward in his chair and took a deep breath, then looked at Newt, shaking his head in surrender.
"I just don't..."
"Teresa."
Thomas jolted up from the chair, knocked it backward, spun in a circle, searching. He had heard...
"What's wrong?" Newt asked. "Did you remember something?"
Thomas ignored him, looking around the room in confusion, knowing he'd heard a voice, then back at the girl.
"I..."
He sat back down, leaned forward, staring at the girl's face.
"Newt, did you just say something before I stood up?"
"No."
"Of course not."
"Oh, I just thought I heard something. I don't know. Maybe it was in my head. Did she say anything?"
"Her?"
Newt asked, his eyes lit up.
"No. Why? What did you hear?"
Thomas was scared to admit it.
I swear I heard a name. Teresa."
"Teresa?"
"No, I didn't hear that. Must have sprung loose from your bloody memory blocks. That's her name, Tommy, Teresa. Has to be."
Thomas felt odd, an uncomfortable feeling, like something supernatural had just occurred.
"It was, I swear, I heard it. But in my mind, man, I can't explain it."
"Thomas."
This time he jumped from the chair and scrambled as far from the bed as possible, knocking over the lamp on the table. It landed with the crash of broken glass. A voice. A girl's voice. Whispery, sweet, confident. He'd heard it. He knew he'd heard it.
"What's bloody wrong with you?" Newt asked.
Thomas's heart was racing. He felt the thumps in his skull. Acid boiled in his stomach.
She's freaking talking to me. In my head. She just said my name.
What?
I swear.
The world spun around him, pressed in, crushing his mind.
I'm hearing her voice in my head, or something. It's not really a voice. Tommy, sit your butt down. What are you bloody talking about?
Newt, I'm serious. It's not really a voice, but it is.
Tom, we're the last ones. It'll end soon. It has to.
The words echoed in his mind, touched his eardrums. He could hear them. Yet they didn't sound like they were coming from the room, from outside his body. They were literally, in every way, inside his mind.
Tom, don't freak out on me.
He put his hands up to his ears, squeezed his eyes shut. It was too strange. He couldn't bring his rational mind to accept what was happening.
My memory's fading already, Tom. I won't remember much when I wake up. We can pass the trials. It has to end. They sent me as a trigger.
Thomas couldn't take it anymore. Ignoring Newt's questions, he stumbled to the door and yanked it open, stepped into the hall, ran. Down the stairs, out the front door, he ran. But it did nothing to shut her up.
Everything's going to change, she said.
He wanted to scream, run until he could run no more. He made it to the east door and sprinted through it, out of the glade. Kept going, through corridor after corridor, deep into the heart of the maze. Rules or no rules. But he still couldn't escape the voice.
It was you and me, Tom. We did this to them. To us.
Chapter 29. Thomas didn't stop until the voice had gone for good. It shocked him when he realized he'd been running for almost an hour. The shadows of the walls ran along toward the east, and soon the sun would set for the night and the doors would close. He had to get back. It only peripherally hit him then that without thinking he'd recognized the direction and the time, that his instincts were strong. He had to get back. But he didn't know if he could face her again. The voice in his head. The strange things she'd said. He had no choice. Denying the truth would solve nothing. And as bad, as weird, as the invasion of his mind had been, it beat another date with the Grievers any day. As he ran toward the glade, he learned a lot about himself. Without meaning to or realizing it, he'd pictured in his mind his exact route through the maze as he escaped the voice. Not once did he falter on his return, turning left and right and running down long corridors in reverse of the way he had come. He knew what it meant. Min-ho had been right. Soon, Thomas would be the best runner. The second thing he learned about himself, as if the night in the maze hadn't proved it already, was that his body was in perfect shape. Just a day earlier he'd been at the end of his strength and sore from top to bottom. He'd recovered quickly and ran now with almost no effort, despite nearing the end of his second hour of running. It didn't take a math genius to calculate that his speed and time combined meant he'd run roughly half a marathon by the time he returned to the glade. Never before had the sheer size of the maze truly hit him. Miles and miles and miles, with its walls that moved every night, he finally understood why the maze was so hard to solve. He'd doubted it until now, wondered how the runners could be so inept. On he ran, left and right, straight on and on. By the time he'd crossed the threshold into the glade, the doors were only minutes away from closing for the night. Exhausted, he headed straight for the deadheads, went deep into the forest until he reached the spot where the trees crowded against the southwest corner. More than anything, he wanted to be alone. When he could hear only the sounds of distant glader conversations, as well as faint echoes of bleating sheep and snorting pigs, his wish was granted. He found the junction of the two giant walls and collapsed into the corner to rest. No one came, no one bothered him. The south wall eventually moved, closing for the night. He leaned forward until it stopped. Minutes later, his back once again comfortably pressed against thick layers of ivy, he fell asleep. The next morning, someone gently shook him awake.
Thomas, wake up!
It was Chuck. The kid seemed to be able to find him anywhere. Groaning, Thomas leaned forward, stretched out his back and arms. A couple of blankets had been placed over him during the night. Someone playing the glade mother.
What time is it? He asked.
You're almost too late for breakfast.
Chuck tugged on his arm.
Come on, get up. You need to start acting normal or things will just get worse.
The events of the previous day came crashing into Thomas's mind, and his stomach seemed to twist inside out.
What are they going to do to me? He thought. Those things she said. Something about me and her doing this to them? To us? What did that mean?
Then it hit him that maybe he was crazy. Maybe the stress of the maze had driven him insane. Either way, only he had heard the voice inside his head.
No one else knew the weird things Teresa had said or accused him of. They didn't even know that she had told him her name. Well, no one except Newt. And he would keep it that way. Things were bad enough. No way he'd make it worse by telling people about voices in his head. The only problem was Newt. Thomas would have to convince him somehow that stress had finally overwhelmed him and a good night's rest had solved everything. "I'm not crazy," Thomas told himself. Surely he wasn't. Chuck was looking at him with eyebrows raised. "Sorry," Thomas said as he stood up, acting as normal as he could. "Just thinking. Let's eat. I'm starving." "Good that," Chuck said, slapping Thomas on the back. They headed for the homestead, Chuck yapping the whole time. Thomas wasn't complaining. It was the closest thing to normal in his life. "Newt found you last night and told everyone to let you sleep. And he told us what the council decided about you. One day in the cell, then you'll enter the runner training program." Some shanks grumbled, some cheered. Most acted like they couldn't care less. "As for me, I think it's pretty awesome." Chuck paused to take a breath, then kept going. "That first night, when you were bragging about being a runner and all that clunk? Shuck it, I was laughing inside so hard. I kept telling myself, this sucker's in for a rude awakening. Well, he proved me wrong, huh?" But Thomas didn't feel like talking about it. "I just did what anyone else would have done. It's not my fault Minho and Newt want me to be a runner." "Yeah, right. Quit being modest." Being a runner was the last thing on Thomas's mind. What he couldn't stop thinking about was Teresa, the voice in his head, what she'd said. "I guess I'm a little excited." Thomas forced a grin, though he cringed at the thought of hanging out in the slammer by himself all day before he got to start. "We'll see how you feel after running your guts out. Anyway, as long as you know old Chucky is proud of you." Thomas smiled at his friend's enthusiasm.
"If only you were my mom," Thomas murmured. "Life would be a peach."
My mom, he thought. The world seemed to darken for a moment. He couldn't even remember his own mother. He pushed the thought away before it consumed him. They made it to the kitchen and grabbed a quick breakfast, taking two empty seats at the big table inside. Every glader going in and out the door gave Thomas a stare. A few came up and offered congratulations. Other than a sprinkling of dirty looks here and there, most people seemed to be on his side. Then he remembered Gally. "Hey, Chuck," he asked after taking a bite of eggs, trying to sound casual. "Did they ever find Gally?"
"No, I was going to tell you. Someone said they saw him run out into the maze after he left the gathering. Hasn't been seen since."
Thomas dropped his fork, not knowing what he'd expected or hoped for. Either way, the news stunned him.
"What? You're serious?
He went into the maze?"
"Yeah. Everyone knows he went nuts. Some shank even accused you of killing him when you ran out there yesterday."
"I can't believe..." Thomas stared at his plate, trying to understand why Gally would do that.
"Don't worry about it, dude. No one liked him except for his few shuck cronies. They're the ones accusing you of stuff."
Thomas couldn't believe how casually Chuck spoke about it.
"You know, the guy is probably dead. You're talking about him like he went on vacation."
A contemplative look came over Chuck.
"I don't think he's dead."
"Huh? Then where is he? Aren't Minho and I the only ones who've survived a night out there?"
"That's what I'm saying. I think his buddies are hiding him inside the glade somewhere. Gally was an idiot, but he couldn't possibly be stupid enough to stay out in the maze all night, like you."
Thomas shook his head. "Maybe that's exactly why he stayed out there. Wanted to prove he could do anything I can do.
The guy hates me."
A pause. "Hated me."
"Well, whatever."
Chuck shrugged as if they were arguing over what to have for breakfast.
"If he's dead, you guys will probably find him eventually. If not, he'll get hungry and show up to eat. I don't care."
Thomas picked up his plate and took it to the counter.
"All I want is one normal day. One day to relax."
"Then your bloody wish is granted," said a voice from the kitchen door behind him.
Thomas turned to see Newt there, smiling. That grin sent a wave of reassurance through Thomas, as if he were finding out the world was okay again.
"Come on, you buggin' jailbird," Newt said. "You can take it easy while you're hanging in the slammer. Let's go. Chucky will bring you some lunch at noon. Thomas nodded and headed out the door, Newt leading the way. Suddenly, a day in prison sounded excellent. A day to just sit and relax. Though something told him there was a better chance of Gally bringing him flowers than of passing a day in the glade with nothing strange happening. Chapter 30 The slammer stood in an obscure place between the homestead and the north glade wall, hidden behind thorny, ragged bushes that looked like they hadn't been trimmed in ages. It was a big block of roughly cut concrete, with one tiny barred window and a wooden door that was locked with a menacing rusty metal latch, like something out of the Dark Ages. Newt took out a key and opened it up, then motioned for Thomas to enter.
"There's only a chair in there and nothing at all for you to do. Enjoy yourself."
Thomas groaned inwardly as he stepped inside and saw the one piece of furniture, an ugly, rickety chair with one leg obviously shorter than the rest, probably on purpose. Didn't even have a cushion.
"Have fun,"
Newt said before closing the door. Thomas turned back to his new home and heard the latch close and the lock click behind him. Newt's head appeared at the little glassless window, looking through the bars, a smirk on his face.
"Nice reward for breaking the rules. You saved some lives, Tommy, but you still need to learn."
"Yeah, I know."
"Order,"
Newt smiled.
"You're not half bad, Shank. But friends or no, gotta run things properly, keep us buggers alive. Think about that while you sit in there and stare at the bloody walls."
And then he was gone. The first hour passed, and Thomas felt boredom creep in like rats under the door. By hour number two, he wanted to bang his head against the wall. 2 hours after that, he started to think having dinner with Gally and the Grievers would beat sitting inside that stupid slammer. He sat and tried to bring back memories, but every effort evaporated into oblivious mist before anything formed. Thankfully, Chuck arrived with lunch at noon, relieving Thomas from his thoughts. After passing some pieces of chicken and a glass of water through the window, he took up his usual role of talking Thomas's ear off.
"Everything's getting back to normal," the boy announced. "The runners are out in the maze. Everyone's working. Maybe we'll survive after all." "Still no sign of Gally."
Newt told the runners to come back lickety-splickety if they found his body.
"And, oh yeah, Albie's up and around. Seems fine. And Newt's glad he doesn't have to be the big boss anymore."
The mention of Albie pulled Thomas's attention from his food. He pictured the older boy thrashing around, choking himself the day before. Then he remembered that no one else knew what Albie had said after Newt left the room, before the seizure. But that didn't mean Albie would keep it between them now that he was up and walking around. Chuck continued talking, taking a completely unexpected turn.
"Thomas, I'm kind of messed up, man. It's weird to feel sad and homesick, but have no idea what it is you wish you could go back to, you know? All I know is I don't want to be here. I want to go back to my family. Whatever's there, whatever I was taken from, I want to remember."
Thomas was a little surprised. He'd never heard Chuck say something so deep and so true.
"I know what you mean," he murmured.
Chuck was too short for his eyes to reach where Thomas could see them as he spoke, but from his next statement, Thomas imagined them filling with a bleak sadness, maybe even tears.
"I used to cry. Every night."
This made thoughts of Albie leave Thomas's mind.
"Yeah? Like a pants-wetting baby. Almost till the day you got here. Then I just got used to it, I guess. This became home, even though we spend every day hoping to get out."
"I've only cried once since showing up, but that was after almost getting eaten alive. I'm probably just a shallow shuck face."
Thomas might not have admitted it if Chuck hadn't opened up.
"You cried?"
he heard Chuck say through the window.
"Then?"
"Yeah. When the last one finally fell over the cliff, I broke down and sobbed till my throat and chest hurt."
Thomas remembered all too well.
"Everything crushed in on me at once. Sure made me feel better. Don't feel bad about crying. Ever."
Kinda does make you feel better, huh? Weird how that works.
A few minutes passed in silence. Thomas found himself hoping Chuck wouldn't leave.
Hey, Thomas? Chuck asked.
Still here.
Do you think I have parents? Real parents?
Thomas laughed, mostly to push away the sudden surge of sadness the statement caused.
Of course you do, Shank.
You need me to explain the birds and bees?
Thomas's heart hurt. He could remember getting that lecture, but not who'd given it to him.
That's not what I mean, Chuck said,
his voice completely devoid of cheer. It was low and bleak, almost a mumble.
Most of the guys who've gone through the changing remember terrible things they won't even talk about, which makes me doubt I have anything good back home. So, I mean, you think it's really possible I have a mom and dad out in the world somewhere, missing me? Do you think they cry at night?
Thomas was completely shocked to realize his eyes had filled with tears. Life had been so crazy since he'd arrived, he'd never really thought of the Gladers as real people, with real families, missing them. It was strange, but he hadn't even really thought of himself that way. Only about what it all meant, who'd sent them there, how they'd ever get out. For the first time, he felt something for Chuck that made him so angry he wanted to kill somebody. The boy should be in school, in a home, playing with neighborhood kids. He deserved to go home at night to a family who loved him, worried about him. A mom who made him take a shower every day, and a dad who helped him with homework. Thomas hated the people who'd taken this poor, innocent kid from his family. He hated them with a passion he didn't know a human could feel. He wanted them dead, tortured even. He wanted Chuck to be happy. But happiness had been ripped from their lives. Love had been ripped from their lives.
Listen to me, Chuck.
Thomas paused, calming down as much as he could, making sure his voice didn't crack.
I'm sure you have parents. I know it. Sounds terrible, but I bet your mom is sitting in your room right now, holding your pillow, looking out at the world that stole you from her. And yeah, I bet she's crying. Hard. Puffy-eyed, snotty-nosed crying. The real deal.
Chuck didn't say anything, but Thomas thought he heard the slightest of sniffles.
Don't give up, Chuck. We're gonna solve this thing. Get out of here. I'm a runner now. I promise on my life I'll get you back to that room of yours. Make your mom quit crying.
And Thomas meant it. He felt it burn in his heart.
Hope you're right,
Chuck said with a shaky voice. He showed a thumbs-up sign in the window, then walked away. Thomas stood up to pace around the little room, fuming with an intense desire to keep his promise.
I swear, Chuck, he whispered to no one. I swear I'll get you back home.
Chapter 31. Just after Thomas heard the grind and rumble of stone against stone announce the closing of the doors for the day, Albie showed up to release him, which was a huge surprise. The metal of key and lock jingled. Then the door to the cell swung wide open.
"Ain't dead, are you, Shank?"
Albie asked. He looked so much better than the day before, Thomas couldn't help staring at him. His skin was back to full color, his eyes no longer crisscrossed with red veins. He seemed to have gained 15 pounds in 24 hours. Albie noticed him goggling.
"Chuck it, boy, what you looking at?"
Thomas shook his head slightly, feeling like he'd been in a trance. His mind was racing, wondering what Albie remembered, what he knew, what he might say about him.
"Well, nothing. Just seems crazy you healed so quickly. You're fine now?"
Albie flexed his right bicep.
"Ain't never been better. Come on out."
Thomas did, hoping his eyes weren't flickering, making his concern obvious. Albie closed the slammer door and locked it, then turned to face him.
"Actually, nothing but a lie. I feel like a piece of clunk twice crapped by a griever."
"Yeah, you looked it yesterday."
When Albie glared, Thomas hoped it was in jest and quickly clarified. "But today you look brand new. I swear. Albie put the keys in his pocket and leaned back against the slammer's door.
So, quite the little talk we had yesterday.
Thomas's heart pounded. He had no idea what to expect from Albie at that point.
Yeah, I remember.
I saw what I saw, Greeny.
It's kind of fading, but I ain't never gonna forget.
It was terrible.
Tried to talk about it, something starts choking me. Now the images are getting up and gone, like that same something don't like me remembering.
The scene from the day before flashed in Thomas's mind. Albie thrashing, trying to strangle himself. Thomas wouldn't have believed it had happened if he hadn't seen it himself. Despite fearing an answer, he knew he had to ask the next question.
What was it about me? You kept saying you saw me. What was I doing?
Albie stared at an empty space in the distance for a while before answering.
You were with the creators, helping them. But that ain't what got me shook up.
Thomas felt like someone had just rammed their fist in his abdomen.
Helping them?
He couldn't form the words to ask what that meant. Albie continued.
I hope the changing doesn't give us real memories, just plants fake ones. Some suspect it. I can only hope. If the world's the way I saw it.
He trailed off, leaving an ominous silence. Thomas was confused, but pressed on.
Can't you tell me what you saw about me?
Albie shook his head.
No way, Shank. Ain't gonna risk strangling myself again. Might be something they got in our brains to control us, just like the memory wipe.
Well, if I'm evil, maybe you should leave me locked up. Thomas half meant it.
Greeny, you ain't evil. You might be a shuck-faced slinthead, but you ain't evil.
Albie showed the slightest hint of a smile, a bare crack in his usually hard face.
What you did, risking your butt to save me and Minho, that ain't no evil I've ever heard of. Now it just makes me think the grief serum and the changing got something fishy about them. For your sake and mine, I hope so.
Thomas was so relieved that Albie thought he was okay, he only heard about half of what the older boy had just said.
How bad was it?
Your memories that came back.
I remembered things from growing up, where I lived, that sort of stuff. And if God himself came down right now and told me I could go back home.
Albie looked to the ground and shook his head again.
If it was real, Greeny, I swear I'd shack up with the Grievers before going back.
Thomas was surprised to hear it was so bad. He wished Albie would give details, describe something, anything. But he knew the choking was still too fresh in Albie's mind for him to budge.
Well, maybe they're not real, Albie. Maybe the grief serum is some kind of psycho drug that gives you hallucinations.
Thomas knew he was grasping at straws. Albie thought for a minute.
A drug. Hallucinations.
Then he shook his head.
Doubt it.
It had been worth a try.
We still have to escape this place.
Yeah, thanks, Greeny, Albie said sarcastically. Don't know what we'd do without your pep talks.
Again, the almost smile. Albie's change of mood broke Thomas out of his gloom.
Quit calling me Greeny. The girl's the Greeny now.
Okay, Greeny, Albie sighed, clearly done with the conversation. Go find some dinner. Your terrible prison sentence of one day is over.
One was plenty.
Despite wanting answers, Thomas was ready to get away from the slammer. Plus, he was starving. He grinned at Albie, then headed straight for the kitchen and food. Dinner was awesome. Frypan had known Thomas would be coming late, so he'd left a plateful of roast beef and potatoes. A note announced there were cookies in the cupboard. The cook seemed fully intent on backing up the support he'd shown for Thomas in the gathering. Minho joined Thomas as he ate, prepping him a little before his first big day of runner training, giving him a few stats and interesting facts, things for him to think about as he went to sleep that night. When they were finished, Thomas headed back to the secluded place where he'd slept the night before, in the corner behind the deadheads. He thought about his conversation with Chuck, wondered how it would feel to have parents to say goodnight to you. Several boys milled about the glade that night, but for the most part it was quiet,
like everyone just wanted to go to sleep, end the day, and be done with it. Thomas didn't complain. That was exactly what he needed. The blanket someone had left for him the night before still lay there. He picked them up and settled in, snuggling up against the comforting corner where the stone walls met in a mass of soft ivy. The mixed smells of the forest greeted him as he took his first deep breath, trying to relax. The air felt perfect, and it made him wonder again about the weather of the place. Never rained, never snowed, never got too hot or too cold. If it weren't for the little fact that they were torn apart from friends and families and trapped in a maze with a bunch of monsters, it would be paradise. Some things here were too perfect. He knew that, but had no explanation. His thoughts drifted to what Minho had told him at dinner about the size and scale of the maze. He believed it. He'd realized the massive scale when he'd been to the cliff. But he just couldn't fathom how such a structure could have been built. The maze stretched for miles and miles. The runners had to be in almost superhuman shape to do what they did every day. And yet they'd never found an exit. And despite that, despite the utter hopelessness of the situation, they still hadn't given up. At dinner, Minho had told him an old story, one of the bizarre and random things he remembered from before, about a woman trapped in a maze. She escaped by never taking her right hand off the walls of the maze, sliding it along as she walked. In doing so, she was forced to turn right at every turn, and the simple laws of physics and geometry ensured that eventually she found the exit. It made sense. But not here. Here, all paths led back to the glade. They had to be missing something. Tomorrow, his training would begin. Tomorrow, he could start helping them find that missing something. Right then, Thomas made a decision. Forget all the weird stuff. Forget all the bad things. Forget it all. He wouldn't quit until he'd solved the puzzle and found a way home. Tomorrow. The word floated in his mind until he finally fell asleep. Chapter 32. Minho woke Thomas before dawn, motioning with a flashlight to follow him back to the homestead. Thomas easily shook off his morning grogginess, excited to begin his training. He crawled out from under his blanket and eagerly followed his teacher, winding his way through the crowd of gladers who slept on the lawn, their snores the only sign they weren't dead. The slightest glow of early morning illuminated the glade, turning everything dark blue and shadowed. Thomas had never seen the place look so peaceful. A cock crowed in the bloodhouse. Finally, in a crooked cranny near a back corner of the homestead, Minho pulled out a key and opened up a shabby door leading to a small storage closet. Thomas felt a shiver of anticipation, wondering what was inside. He caught glimpses of ropes and chains and other odds and ends as Minho's flashlight crisscrossed the closet. Eventually, it fell on an open box full of running shoes. Thomas almost laughed. It seemed so ordinary. "That right there's the number one supply we get," Minho announced. "At least for us. They send new ones in the box every so often. If we had bad shoes, we'd have feet that looked like freaking Mars." He bent over and rummaged through the pile. "What size do you wear?"
"Size?" Thomas thought for a second. "I don't know."
It was so odd sometimes what he could and couldn't remember. He reached down and pulled off a shoe he'd worn since coming to the glade and took a look inside.
11.
"Geez, Shank, you got big feet."
Minho stood up holding a pair of sleek silver ones.
"But looks like I've got some. Man, we could go canoeing in these things. Those are fancy."
Thomas took them and walked out of the closet to sit on the ground, eager to try them on. Minho grabbed a few more things before coming out to join him.
"Only runners and keepers get these," Minho said.
Before Thomas could look up from tying his shoes, a plastic wristwatch dropped into his lap. It was black and very simple, its face showing only a digital display of the time.
"Put it on and never take it off. Your life might depend on it."
Thomas was glad to have it. Though the sun and the shadows had seemed plenty to let him know roughly what time it was up to that point, being a runner probably required more precision. He buckled the watch onto his wrist and then returned to fitting on his shoes. Minho continued talking. "Here's a backpack, water bottles, lunch pack, some shorts and t-shirts, other stuff." He nudged Thomas, who looked up. Minho was holding out a couple of pairs of tightly cut underwear, made from a shiny white material. "These bad boys are what we call runny undies. Keeps you, nice and comfy."
"Nice and comfy?"
"Yeah, you know, you're..." "Yeah, got it." Thomas took the underwear and other stuff. "You guys really have this all thought out, don't you? Couple of years running your butt off every day, you figure out what you need and ask for it." He started stuffing things into his own backpack. Thomas was surprised. "You mean you can make requests? Supplies you want? Why would the people who'd sent them here help so much?" "Of course we can. Just drop a note in the box and there she goes. Doesn't mean we always get what we want from the creators. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't." "Ever ask for a map?" Minho laughed. "Yeah, tried that one. Asked for a TV, too, but no luck. I guess those shuck faces don't want us seeing how wonderful life is when you don't live in a freaking maze." Thomas felt a trickle of doubt that life was so great back home. What kind of world allowed people to make kids live like this? The thought surprised him, as if its source had been founded in actual memory, a wisp of light in the darkness of his mind. But it was already gone. Shaking his head, he finished lacing up his shoes, then stood up and jogged around in circles, jumping up and down to test them out. "They feel pretty good. I guess I'm ready." Minho was still crouched over his backpack on the ground. He glanced up at Thomas with a look of disgust. "You look like an idiot prancing around like a shuck ballerina. Good luck out there with no breakfast, no packed lunch, no weapons." Thomas had already stopped moving, felt an icy chill.
"Weapons?"
"Weapons." Minho stood and walked back to the closet. "Come here, I'll show you." Thomas followed Minho into the small room and watched as he pulled a few boxes away from the back wall. Underneath lay a small trap door. Minho lifted it to reveal a set of wooden stairs leading into blackness. "Keep 'em down in the basement so Shanks like Galley can't get to them. Come on." Minho went first. The stairs creaked with every shift of weight as they descended the dozen or so steps. The cool air was refreshing, despite the dust and the strong scent of mildew. They hit a dirt floor, and Thomas couldn't see a thing until Minho turned on a single light bulb by pulling a string. The room was larger than Thomas had expected, at least 30 square feet. Shelves lined the walls, and there were several blocky wooden tables. Everything in sight was covered with all manner of junk that gave him the creeps. Wooden poles, metal spikes, large pieces of mesh, like what covers a chicken coop, rolls of barbed wire, saws, knives, swords. One entire wall was dedicated to archery. Wooden bows, arrows, spare strings. The sight of it immediately brought back the memory of Ben getting shot by Albie and the Deadheads.
"Wow,"
Thomas murmured, his voice a dull thump in the enclosed space. At first he was terrified that they needed so many weapons, but he was relieved to see that the vast majority of it was covered with a thick layer of dust.
"Don't use most of it," Minho said.
"But you never know. All we usually take with us is a couple of sharp knives." He nodded toward a large wooden trunk in the corner, its top open and leaning against the wall. Knives of all shapes and sizes were stacked haphazardly all the way to the top. Thomas just hoped the room was kept secret from most of the gladers.
"Seems kind of dangerous to have all this stuff," he said.
"What if Ben had gotten down here right before he went nuts and attacked me?" Minho pulled the keys out of his pocket and dangled them with a clickety-clank. "Only a few lucky toads have a set of these."
"Still,
quit your belly aching and pick a couple. Make sure they're nice and sharp. Then we'll go get breakfast and pack our lunch. I want to spend some time in the map room before we head out." Thomas was pumped to hear that. He'd been curious about the squat building ever since he'd first seen a runner go through its menacing door. He selected a short silvery dagger with a rubbery grip, then one with a long black blade.
His excitement waned a little. Even though he knew perfectly well what lived out there, he still didn't want to think about why.